A close reading of a novel reveals something about the author's own values, even when it's not autobiography. Sometimes it can shake even more revelation out of the reader. Evan is a 31-year-old rock musician living in Seattle. He has epilepsy. He's kind of a slacker who was suddenly reunited with a son he knew about but never made an effort to meet. Author Gar Stein tells Evan's story in the novel How Evan Broke His Head and Other Secrets. Stein's the author of the best-selling book The Art of Racing in the Rain. He says that in this book, fathers and son seek some reconciliation.
It's about redemption. I mean, almost everything I write has got redemption in it somewhere. It's about the idea of this guy, Evan, who, as he says, lives down to expectations. You know, he's a screw up. He never did anything right, he thinks. He's always been told this by his parents. You know, he could have been something and he threw it all away. And rather than challenge that and go out and try and do something on a grand scale, he lives down to his expectations and says, "You're right, I'm a slacker, I'm a loser." And now he has to decide if he's going to pull himself out of that. So will he redeem himself? Will he step up to the challenge? Or will he kind of wallow in his mediocre life?
I mean, he heard it his whole life. What a waste.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see how somebody would inculcate that aspect into your reality.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a thing. That's why I wanted to catch that moment. You know, he's, as I said, he's 31 years old. And I think that he had some success early on in music, and then it's so easy for that to become fleeting. Music is a very tricky industry, so it can be easy to fail at it. And what do? Do we wallow in the failure, or do we try again?
Gar Stein's book is How Evan Broke His Head and Other Secrets. Is he an honest narrator?
Well, it's
reliable narrator.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure any narrator is reliable. I mean, there's a line that Evan has in there, which is, you know, the truth is in the eyes of he who tells it. So what good is it? You know, everything has a skew to it. And I play with that a lot in the book. It's not in the first person. It's third person, but it's a very tight third person narrative. So we really get inside his head. And he has impressions of things that happened in his past that other people have differing recollections. And which one is the true one? This is a question he asks several times.
There's this great exchange early on when he calls up his girlfriend's brother.
Yeah.
So this is where Evan is with his son, who he never raised or paid much attention to. The woman he had the child with has died, and now he's trying to get to know this woman's life as well as his son's life.
Right. He's trying to put together how their relationship was, this girlfriend from his, who's now passed away, who was killed in a car accident, and he and his son, who he's meeting, he's trying to understand the dynamic. And so he goes through her things and he's looking through, and he discovers the phone number of his former girlfriend's twin brother, who's living in Coos Bay. And he calls him up kind of spontaneously. At 1 in the morning. And then Brad's reaction, they have a tense exchange, and Brad is the brother, and he says this. He says, "There's something about you, Evan," Brad says. "I don't know. I can see what she saw in you to a certain extent. I mean, you seem like you don't know what's going on, but deep down you know exactly what's going on, don't you? That's the double-edged sword, Evan. I like you for it, but I also hate you for it, you know?"
So how about that? Is Evan that way? I mean, Evan does have this issue. He has this epilepsy which has shaped his way of being. Does he know what's going on?
I think that's...
Do I have to decide?
I think it's supposed to be for the reader to decide. I mean, look, I believe that we all know a lot that's going on, and we have a certain level of denial that we like to keep with ourselves, you know, that like we see what's happening, but we don't want to address it or confront it. So we avert our eyes. And I think we all do it on greater or lesser levels, you know, depending on what suits us. And, you know, I think that's something that we should – we do it – our brain can only take in so much. You know, we can only cope with so much. And so we do it in a way for self-protection. But sometimes it can be damaging if we're denying something that's important to confront.
As a journalist, the most stinging criticism I got in print one time was that I was oblivious.
Oh.
And that's a hard one, right?
Yeah. Well, that's it. Exactly. I mean, you're supposed to be, as a journalist is supposed to be seeing all sides of it, from as many different perspectives as possible so as to be able to portray this in a reliable way to other people. But if you're an oblivious reporter, you're filling in things with a certain agenda that...
But here's the thing. I rejected that notion.
Well, you
I should. Said, I am not oblivious. And then I thought, well, am I? Is that part of my obliviousness? And that felt like right. that felt like where Evan was coming
That's
from
right.
a lot
that,
of times.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You're denying your obliviousness is actually part of the larger oblivion that you're living in.
So Evan has a girlfriend who basically verbally slaps him upside the head with that notion, which is he was sort of whining about what he should do and how he should be. And she said, you know, you have to make a choice of how you're going to be in the world.
Right.
He responded to that. He reacted to that.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we need to have a polarizing person or event in our life that makes us confront our motives and our sense of oblivion, you know. And that's what Micah, the character in the book who Evan meets and falls in love with, she's like, I don't have time for you to be oblivious.
Even though I understand you have epilepsy, which could kill you at any time.
That's right. That, well, but you know what?
Yeah.
Shake it off, man. We're playing the game. It's going. You know, life is going forward. And if you sit there and wallow in your issues, then you're not going anywhere. You know, it's a similar message. Interestingly, now that I haven't talked about this book in ages, but you know, it's similar message to The Art of Racing in the Rain. The idea of the racing part of it that. You know, on a racetrack, if something happens, if an incident happens, you can't. If you sit there and complain about it, guess what? Everyone's passing you. You need to say, now what do I do? Okay, this happened. It's where it is. Now what do I do to advance my position on the track? Same thing with Evan in his life, you know?
That's what he learned to say to his father and to his son, yeah. That I'm moving on now. We're doing this. Because his father had dismissed him and sort of his father seemed like somebody stuck.
Yeah.
Whereas Evan came to an awareness.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, ideally that's, you know, I mean, we could break it down technique-wise. You know, Evan is our protagonist. Therefore, he must change. He must learn something. He must evolve. His father, Carl, the famous heart surgeon, is a catalyst who's there to provoke Evan into a change of some kind. So
And his son and Dean?
And his son Dean, yeah. And
if
Dean
you're going to break it down for me?
Dean is going to provoke
literary
as well.
Professor, what's
yeah,
he?
Yeah, I know, right? Well, stories are all have the universal elements and you know, hopefully they're seamless, but you know, if we start digging around, we could find them in any good story, we could see all these things.
I like Dean. As a character and as a person, because he seemed so willing to be unhappy, willing to try to figure it out, willing to be angry,
yeah,
honest about what was happening to him.
Yeah, he has some really good confrontation. I had fun writing Dean. There's some good confrontations between him and Evan, where he calls him on a lot of things too. You know, he's like at some point he says, you know, I'm not your suitcase. I'm staying here. You know, that's what 14-year-old kids are supposed to do. You know, they're supposed to be challenging. They're supposed to be questioning their place in the world and how they got there and where they're going. One would hope that a 31-year-old had figured that out, but oftentimes, especially in today's culture and society, 31-year-olds sometimes they don't. Figure that out.
And that's what Evan said about himself, right?
Yeah.
People make up stories about themselves, Dean, Evan says, and then they try to make those stories come true. Did Evan change his story?
Well, I think that that's the idea, is that Evan is trying to take charge of his narrative. You see, we can listen to other people's stories or we can make our own story. I think that's Evan's epiphany at the end of the book. People make up stories all the time. I mean, this happens when my two older boys were little. My mother-in-law would come over to the apartment and she would say, oh, one of your boys is the athlete and the other one's going to be the actor. And she did it over and over. And it's not a big deal. It's innocuous. You know, she was just being affectionate and whatever else. But I kept on thinking, you know what? They hear that so often, they start to think, I have to be an actor. I have to be an athlete. And this happens in families all the time. And with Evan, he listened to the people around him. They said, he made a mistake. He got hit by a car that created his epilepsy. And so everyone blames that as the downfall of Evan's life. And he says, okay, I'll accept that. But that just because someone makes up the story doesn't mean we can't rewrite it or we can't change what we want to do if we have the internal fortitude to take charge of our own narrative.
That is so hard, though, especially if you somehow get it in your mind that your narrative is, I can't do that.
That's right. That's right. But that's where we have to – that's why we have to be put in dramatic situations in books where, you know, we're challenged and we have these characters who are acting as catalysts to confront us in certain aspects. And then and we can hopefully read a book like this, I would like to think, and say, well, if he can change why can't I change my story? That's the whole idea. This is why literature is – now we're getting to this is why literature is important. This is why fiction is important, the idea of empathy, the idea of being able to see other people's lives and what they're doing and how maybe that could apply to me as well.
That's Seattle-based novelist Garth Stein. The 10th anniversary edition of this early novel by Stein, How Evan Broke His Head and Other Secrets, was just released. You're tuned to The Record.